ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Miyu Kyokiranta here with a bonus episode of Earshot. In our last episode, Remember Balgo, producer Kirsty Melville took us inside the remote East Kimberley Aboriginal community of Balgo, where she spent much of the last year living after her partner started running the Wiramanu Aboriginal Corporation. If you've got time to listen to that first, this story will hit home a little harder. But here's a quick recap, just in case.
There's not much in Balgo. One store, a brilliant arts centre, a Catholic school, beautiful new pool, but a dilapidated basketball court, gravel footy ground, and the saddest playground I've ever seen. About 400 people live in this former mission. Six different language groups forced together by colonisation. English is the second, third, or even fourth language.
But it's a community in crisis. For much of this year, Balgo has been in turmoil, ripped apart by fighting.
It's hard for me because my families are fighting and other families every morning. How can we solve this problem? How? It's very hard. The place and the people we're worried about. How can we solve it?
And there's a mental health crisis, a situation made worse by fly-in, fly-out mental health services.
Not enough support. To me, it's no help. You can't build a relationship coming in here 2 or 3 days or 1 week, 2 weeks, and then go for a month or two and then come back. It's just hard, because the people on the ground have no resources.
But it's not just mental health support that's lacking. It's pretty much everything. All those statistics you hear about the gap between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people, here, it's a gaping chasm, especially for Aboriginal people with a disability. In this episode, Kirsty takes us back to Balgo, where people on the NDIS are lagging far, far behind those in the rest of the country.
Petrol sniffing. The words are enough to strike fear into the hearts of people who live here. In our last episode, Auntie Dulcina Nala talked about the petrol sniffing crisis in the 1990s and early 2000s.
We had first... In Balgo there was petrol. Petrol first damaged their brain for young people. They were sleeping under those caves where the goats used to stay. They were camping there. They had bottles like this in the cave full of petrol.
In 2005, after a huge community education campaign, the harm reduction fuel, Opal, replaced unleaded and sniffing dropped off. But petrol sniffing has left a long tail.
My name is Frances Mangley. I grew up in Balgo. I got two sons, Marcus and Shannon. Marcus in Perth and Shannon here.
Frances is one of the first people I met when I first came to Balgo. I'd sit at the art centre watching this quiet, gentle, deeply thoughtful woman painting the bush foods from her homelands along the Canning Stock Route. But I sensed a deep sadness too. And then I heard her story.
What were the boys like when they were little?
They were good, doing all right at school, Shannon and Marcus. But when they grew older, they were drinking, you know, smoking. But when they were 15, they leave school, you know.
And did they ever sniff petrol?
Yeah, they did.
But that changed them forever.
Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah, Marcus first and then Shannon. Talked to the doctors, you know. But they had brains were getting, you know. Mm-hmm.
There's a generation of men in their 30s and 40s who sniffed petrol. Most are lucky. They stopped and went on with their lives. But some of their friends, like Francis's boys, never recovered. Their brains were permanently damaged. The oldest, Marcus, now lives in a group home in Perth. But Francis still looks after Shannon here in Balgo. Both are on the NDIS.
In fact, more than half of Balgo's NDIS clients are young men like Shannon, living with brain damage from petrol sniffing, their families struggling to care for them. And truth be told, there are others who should be on the NDIS, people who haven't even been assessed. There are just so many cracks for people living in remote communities to fall through, and disability is a big one.
I have often felt that the people here, they've not ever been nurtured, even in a family sense. What they really crave is to be nurtured.
Manny Ivory is the business manager at Wiramanu Aboriginal Corporation, where my partner works. And on top of this, she manages the 9 NDIS clients who live in Balgo, including Francis's son, Shannon. A few years back, frustration with the Kununurra-based NDIS service provider was building.
Well, the families were always asking, what is this mob? What are they doing? We don't see them. Why can't you do that, Jakajalu? And while these people are really lovely and have their hearts in the right place, just the sheer problem of distance really makes it hard for them to service the clients in an effective way.
Kununurra is 8 hours' drive away. Half of that is on the Tanami Road. It's a heavily corrugated dirt road, and it's often closed for months over the wet season. Getting service providers out here is hard and it's expensive, and their work is spread across many communities in the East Kimberley.
They would come out and spend some time with the boys, maybe once every 8 weeks, sometimes every 4 weeks. They hadn't had any experience at all in living on community, the homes that people were living in, the overcrowding. Some of the homes in Balgo have 10 or 12 people living in them. And so you may have the grandmother, the mother, the children, adult children, and then their small children living in one home. And managing some of these NDIS clients must be really difficult when they're managing so many other issues in their homes. You know, they may be managing a situation where they have no power because the power's not working, the light switches aren't working, the doors don't lock, so there's nowhere for them to go to get away from perhaps a violent outburst. Very, very complex. Some families have got 2 and 3 NDIS clients living in one home. I can't even imagine how they do it day to day. We couldn't get any immediate support from the organisations. When they flew in the plane for the day or 3 days, there may not have been an incident, so they may not have ever experienced what it was like day to day living and working with NDIS recipients.
And so Manny took over the management of Balgo's NDIS clients, including Francis's son, Shannon.
How old is Shannon?
33. He walks around smoking. He goes everywhere. He can't go to sleep. He just walk and walk. And sometimes daytime we get agitated, angry. He gets shaky and shakes. His eye goes around and around and get angry.
He starts yelling, doesn't he?
He yell too much. And asks me for smoke. Especially money, money.
What does he want to buy with that money? You can tell, Kirsty.
Smoke. Yeah.
Special kind of smoke?
Yeah. I just said no.
It's like humbug, isn't it? He humbugs over and over, asks, Mum, 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 Mum.
Yeah.
I've seen him throw bread at you at the breakfast table and doesn't stop because he wants you to give in, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You're very kind to your boys and you love them very much, don't you?
Yeah. But it's too hard to look after them, you know?
Oh, it is. And that's very hard for you to say, I know.
If Francis and Shannon lived in a city, they'd have much more support. And so would Reese, another young man on the NDIS.
Good morning, Reece.
Good morning.
How are
good
morning.
You?
Morning.
Morning.
Now, tell us about your football team.
My football team is Saints. St Kilda. Lions been beat me.
Reece is a really special young man. You'll often see Reece standing around and whoever's standing with him will be laughing. He will often come into Centrelink and really it's just purely for the contact. He's reaching out for someone to care.
Reece is a ray of sunshine in community. He's always proudly decked out in something loud. His current favourite, a bright yellow shirt with huge elephants on it.
You've got lots of Saints clothes too, haven't you?
Yes, yes.
And also, what's the stuff that you really love that we look after so that it's not misused in the community? What's that green can called?
Green can, BBs.
Oh, no, not alcohol. What do you
mean? Adam spray, eh? Mint spray.
Ah, make you smell nice.
Yeah. Mint spray. Yes.
Reece has an acquired brain injury from a car accident when he was 12. He's now 34.
I have an accident down here, next to the police station.
In a car?
Toyota. Yes. Fall down, I've kissed the ground.
Oh, and you really hurt your arm badly, didn't you?
Yeah.
And your arm gives you a lot of problem, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Smashed my shoulder and hurt my brains.
And how well were his needs being met when the service provider was in Kununurra, 8 hours away?
The service provider would come in and, you know, sit down with Reece and play guitar maybe once every 8 weeks. That 72 or 36 hours that they were on community would have been spread between 9 clients.
It was frustrating for the families desperate for support. But it must have been frustrating for the support workers too. Now, locals are paid to spend time with the NDIS clients. They can communicate with carers in their language, Gukja, and spend time on country with them. But it's limited. They're untrained. There's no specialist support.
I've got a cliffside. Called the graveyard.
You go and visit people at the graveyard, don't you?
Yeah. My families make me like busy, like people, like a lion, every lion, laugh, teasing people, like ladies. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you make people laugh?
I make a joke, Daniel. Hey, you got a big milk, onion, and like in the coffee. Crazy. That's a funny man.
Ultimately, we would love to have enough support workers to, you know, maybe do some work experience with these guys in the shop, maybe filling some shelves. They'd really love to do that, but at the moment we don't have the staff.
Or the funding. All the NDIS clients here in Balgo are relatively new to the system. Most are still on their first 3-year plan, very basic ones that are critically underfunded. Remote living means no access to disability support workers, very limited access to physical therapists. It's incredibly difficult to attract workers out here. Wirramanu Aboriginal Corporation recently advertised a position working with the NDIS clients, and not a single person applied. And then there's the critical issue of respite. It comes up time and time again.
Oh, no, we don't want to go to respite.
Yes, I know you do. You want to go to respite and have a break from community.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I like to get some, like, lollies for them young little kids. And some of them little toys, there's toys.
Oh, so you like to go shopping and you can bring back toys and lollies for your little nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I some see.
Fishing, see them, like, in the river, like crocodile.
And tell me, Reece, when you go into respite, you like to go to the swimming pool?
Yeah, I like in the swimming pool, yeah.
But you don't like going swimming here, do you?
I see, like, people, like, laughing with me. Laughing.
Teasing you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And tell me why you like respite so much.
When I be in the home, like, noise. people make a noise down in my home. Some of them people, like, when they come to me, like, humbug me, but Reese, you got a cigarette? I speak to them, now I ain't got no cigarette.
Sometimes we say to you to hide yours, don't we?
Yeah, I've been hiding.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And how often do you get to go away on respite?
2 weeks.
2 weeks a year?
Yeah.
But for Francis, getting respite for Shannon is almost impossible. He has much higher needs.
But it's too hard, I can't go for respite, you know.
In the Kimberley, there are no carers to work in the respite centres, so that's very difficult. And we can get Shannon in down where Marcus is, can't we? But Shannon doesn't like to fly.
What happens?
He gets scared, you know, and frightened. He get up from the seat and scream to the pilot, you know. He can't sit down in the chair.
Doesn't he say something about how high he is?
Yeah, he said, I'm really high. I'm going to the space, to the moon, stars. He don't like flying.
Some of the NDIS clients cannot go out of community because they have mental health issues and they can't travel on a plane with the general community because if they became frightened, it might become quite dangerous in a plane. Some of the clients have been removed to mental health facilities, but they're sectioned, so they're heavily sedated, accompanied by a nurse. It's very traumatic. There's very little respite for those types of clients that need restraining in the Kimberley. In fact, there aren't any.
And what does that mean for you when you don't get any respite?
I feel tired.
Where do you go for support?
I don't know. They need more support, you know, the people.
We don't have any mental health workers or health and wellbeing workers here on the ground that can deal with something that comes up, because sometimes people like that get very distressed. There's no one here that can sit down and just talk to them, people with good skills and trained people.
Some mothers get sick, you know, some get tired, some can't take it anymore, you know, they need support.
I think Frances is able to go on respite, but she's very reluctant to because she worries about what will happen to Shannon.
What do you worry about?
Yes, he might worry, and he might have suicide or something. Where's my mum? He might say. He might walk away.
You've been considering asking for guardianship for Shannon. But you understand the difficulties are that because he wants to live on country, that they will really listen to that and want him to stay.
Why did you think about that guardianship might help you?
Because I was feeling sick, you know. It stressed me out, you know.
Did you think that it would mean he would get more support?
Yeah, support more.
What it means for the family, sadly, is that they have to go without having a break. And that's why I feel if we had a facility here that they could move into, we could employ support workers to live with them, to give them, the families, those breaks that they need. The mothers of these boys and the sisters and brothers endure sometimes very, very violent situations. For one particular client who has said that he will murder someone if we don't get him out of here. It's a very, very hard situation to have a chair thrown or to be charged with a 12-inch screwdriver just because they're frustrated that they want some help and they can't get it.
Has that happened to you?
Yes, several occasions.
I think back to a story I produced last year about a young man on the NDIS in Sydney's Northern Beaches, Oscar. Oscar has daily activities with a group of friends, guided by disability support workers. He has physical therapy, work programs, access to a special gym, and so he should. But the contrast between Oscar's life and those of Shannon and Reese and the seven other NDIS clients in Balgo is revealing.
We've really just stumbled into the NDIS, so we're just doing the best that we can with all the other tasks that we have, and you really need to walk with them so that they can access things that are available to everyday people in Australia, and helping them access what we have taken for granted for years and years and years.
Remember Balgo was produced by Kirsty Melville. The sound engineer was David LeMay. And if you missed the first episode about Balgo, pop back into your podcast feed and have a listen. And that's a wrap for Earshot's latest season of stories, Remember Me. And it's a wrap from me too. I'm heading overseas to spend some time with my family, and so I'm handing the Earshot reins over. We've got something super exciting in the works for you, so stay tuned. I want to thank my ABC colleagues for the rich conversations we have about our craft. All our producers out in the world for sharing their ideas and experiences. And you, thank you for listening. It's been an absolute honour bringing you these stories each week. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and I'll catch you around sometime soon with In Earshot.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.